Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson. I am across from good friend, good dendrologist, good podcast host, Casey Clapp.
Hi, Alex.
Hey, Case.
It's good to see you.
It's good to see you.
I know I've seen you multiple times already, but for the listener, this is like a brand new opening.
Yes, and why is that, Case?
Well, I just got back from a fun little adventure. I was kind of gone for a couple months. Did a little bit of traveling. Went out and collected a bunch of cones, if you follow me on the old Instagram.
That's right.
Did a travel through the U.S., the southern portion of it, just trying to keep as warm as possible. Ironically, we brought the cold with us everywhere we went.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. You were sleeping out of your truck.
Yeah, and it was lovely. It was all by design, so it wasn't we were prepared for these things.
Sure.
But my God, it still got so cold when you're like, yeah, I'm just gonna go hike up here, and it's like, I need to go home.
Wow.
This is so cold. We went on the Shenandoah River per the song
Country Roads.
That's the one. Thank you. We were on the South Fork, I think, of the Shenandoah River, and it was a lovely day, but it was so windy. We did a two-nighter thing, and then whenever we'd get out, we had to like go find some place, make a fire, and like be really warm. And just we would freeze if we didn't. It was obscene.
Sit in the fire.
Essentially, we sat in the fire.
Yeah,
because we were like shaking and so cold. And we're
jeez,
like, this is not fun. We have how many more days of this?
It's like dangerous almost.
Yeah, it was almost dangerous, but not quite dangerous.
Mm. Well, yes, Casey, you're back. I'm very happy to have you back.
It's good to be here.
Both as your friend and your podcast host, yeah, partner.
Hey, I'm happy to be back. We got a lot of things planned, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we do. You got back and we had an 8-hour meeting.
Yeah, it was a long time. Yeah.
About all the stuff we want to get up to this year for Completely Arbitrary.
Mm-hmm,
and this episode is one of them.
Yeah.
Casey, today we're talking about the white mulberry.
I'm really excited about this, Alex.
I am going to here's how I'm going to be a little stinker this episode.
What?
I'm going to pronounce it mulberry.
Oh my God.
As the Brits might.
All right.
And I would appreciate if you pronounced it mulberry.
Mulberry. Yeah, because that's what I wasn't, even if you had asked me to, I probably would have declined.
Okay.
And be like, no, I will go mulberry.
Yeah.
Because I prefer the mulberry.
Because that's how it's said in our social circles.
In every language I've ever spoken.
I don't know. If there are some Brits listening, shout out. Well, here's the thing. I don't think I'm doing it correctly because, you would say in England, you would pronounce you would say Canterbury.
Yeah.
As Canterbury, B-U-R-Y.
Ah, yeah.
The mulberry is B-E-R-R-Y. So maybe they do say mulberry.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna elect myself to say mulberry.
Okay, yeah, I think that's good. I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt here and assume that you're just outright correct.
I don't know if you should do that.
I'm. It's already done.
That's, Casey. Wow,
that was back there already.
Case, as we do every episode, let's imagine that you and I are walking through, how about this? A Chinese silkworm orchard.
Okay, yeah, that works.
And we come across some white mulberries. Casey, let's ID this tree.
Alex, this is a tree that is easy to identify once you know how to identify it.
Okay.
And mostly, I have two things that help me constantly. The first is the leaves of the mulberry tree, which we're going to start with. The leaves as an alternately arranged tree, deciduous, so its leaves will come and they'll go. The leaves are similar to the sassafras in that they have a lobiness or a non-lobiness to them.
Right.
So some will just be a perfectly like heart-shaped leaf, somewhat heart-shaped, but it also, this is the thing, the plant kind of grows leaves in wildly different ways for no good reason.
This is interesting to me.
I don't know why.
I have a theory, okay. But I'm going to wait until later.
All right. So what happens is at one point it can have like a mitten where it just has one lobe, like a mittened glove.
Uh-huh.
Other times it has two lobes. Sometimes it's just a perfectly nice entire leaf where there's no lobes whatsoever. Sometimes the base is flat. Sometimes the base kind of goes out and it has like, you know, a diamondish kind of shape. Other times it has a base that is chordate. So it has like a heart lobes at the very bottom of it. And other times when it gets like really lobey, the lobes look almost like the top of a, I want to think like a parapet. What am I thinking? Like in, what's the big thing in India? The
Taj Mahal.
The Taj Mahal. Thank you, Alex. Wow. I'm
sort of like
a
pointed dome.
It's like it's a pointed dome, but it almost looks like that onion shape where it like goes up and out and then has like this tall bit in the middle, like an acuminate tip is what it is in leaf terms.
Sure. Like the Russian architecture.
Yes, perfect.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. I also pictured, as I was thinking of the Taj Mahal, like St. Petersburg, Russia, but I was like, well, that's not going to get us anywhere. I should have just said that. Well, anyway, that's what it looks.
Okay.
And when they get these intense lobes, they're just very bulbously lobed, and it looks really beautiful. Like, I like the leaf because of that.
That's really cool. I will say, if I were another tree looking at the white mulberry, this would drive me nuts.
Yeah. Well, would you be pissed off?
It's inconsistency.
It's perfect every time.
Yeah. I would be a tree that has the exact same leaf every time, because I like order and structure.
Oh my gosh.
And a white mulberry challenges those beliefs by just growing whatever.
So you'll be like the old military guy and the young tree that's growing up who's just like, man, I'm going to make my leaves however I want. You're like, you're a mess.
Right.
Get yourself cleaned up. Straighten your leaves out.
I'm like the composer who only writes marches. And then this young Philip Glass type comes along.
Ugh, my God. Alex, I would never have expected that from you.
Yeah. Casey, let's talk bark.
The bark is the other thing I was telling you about that like I usually see and I'm like, aha, this is a mulberry tree.
Okay.
For whatever reason, the bark is very two-tone for me.
Hmm.
You know how we often talk about bark as a cylinder inside of another cylinder,
right.
So the bark always looks like it's kind of getting ripped apart from the outside.
Yeah.
Because it is. Now, for the mulberry, it has like a muted brown. You know, like a weathered brown where it kind of starts to get gray tones?
Like a khaki?
Yes, exactly, but still very dark. Like the color of this floor. It's just, you know, wooden floor, right?
Yeah, that's helpful.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone, please come in, take a look at the floor. We want to get this. We're going to have Instagram photos of just the Taj Mahal and your floor for this episode.
No, we are not.
So whatever it looks like, it's kind of this aged, weathered brown.
Yeah.
But then in the middle, it has like this orange like little pop that comes out.
Yeah.
In between where the furrows or like little ridges start to develop.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, whenever I'm looking at the tree, I'm like, what exactly is this tree? And then I look at the bark and it has that like orange tint in the middle.
Right.
I'm like, boom, that has got to be a mulberry tree.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what helps me do it.
That's its inner self is that orange.
Yeah, I think so. That's
its outer self is that weathered brown.
Exactly. That's the young, that's the young leaf
mm-hmm.
and the old leaf.
Oh, sure.
Out there in terms of old hat and young hat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, you're so old leaf.
This
can't believe you. I start using that more often.
Yeah, I don't know how it would play with most people, but in our universe here, it's great.
People are gonna be like, I get it. That's totally true.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I should know about the leaves, and this will come up in a second when we talk about other mulberries, mm-hmm. is that the white mulberry notably will have smooth, glossy leaves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. As opposed to like a, what's a tree with a rough leaf?
The red mulberry.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
That's how you tell the difference. They're really notoriously difficult to tell. But that is the one big clue that you can always go to remember is that the red is rough. The white is nice and smooth and lustrous.
Fantastic. And Casey, of course, it's in the name. This thing grows a mulberry.
Yeah, it does.
A mulberry, excuse me.
It grows a delicious mulberry. Every time you say mulberry, I'm going to follow it up with mulberry.
Okay.
And then hope that that then reminds you, oh, I should have said mulberry.
Right.
And then the next time you say mulberry, I'll say mulberry.
God, this is...
I was really hoping to get that down.
This is how we restore balance.
It is. That's true. Yeah. So you're right. It does. It makes these adorable little berries.
Yeah.
Funny enough, they're not true berries. Similar how a raspberry is not an actual berry.
Well, this is news.
Yeah. Let's remind ourselves, a tomato is a berry.
Right.
So that is the technical thing where it has just one big fruit with all the seeds inside of it. And
yeah.
It's usually very fleshy all the way through. A mulberry is actually an aggregate of all those other little berries. So it's more like one little tiny fruit with one seed aggregated next to 50 of its best pals.
Okay.
The flowers are little catkins. So when those little catkins come out, they are long shoots with a bunch of little flowers all on the side, kind of like a bristle brush or something like
uh-huh.
that, or a bottle brush. Then when those flowers, each individually, are pollinated, then they each individually become one little tiny fruit. That one little tiny fruit is directly next to another little tiny fruit, next to another one, next to another one, next to another one, along the whole thing, so that when they get big and juicy, they bump right up next to each other, and now it looks like you have one big raspberry-ish looking fruit.
Wow.
But it is, in fact, many different ones.
This is crazy.
You've experienced this a billion times.
It makes sense.
You've eaten these fruits, not necessarily the mulberry.
No, but I've eaten my fair share of berries.
Yeah, exactly.
Or what I usually call berries.
Exactly.
I'm going to now call them congregates of fruits.
Yeah, you better. Hey, can I go get some rasp congregates of fruit? Aggregates of fruit, rather.
Oh, you said aggregate.
Yeah,
okay.
And aggregate fruit. Yeah,
I'm going to call it a congregation of fruit.
Yeah, please do.
Like
I think
a murder of crows.
It's a murder. Can I get a rasp murder, please? That'd be really great. The one of the trees we recently talked about, the Osage orange.
Yes, yeah.
So that...
Oh.
It's also in the same family, and they have that same big aggregate kind of fruit.
Yes.
It just doesn't get quite as delicious as this.
Interesting.
Yeah, they went for different animals, those, for better or worse. Poor thing.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, orange.
Yeah.
This is a fascinating revelation, Casey. Maybe we've talked about it before, but I'm just sort of relearning it.
Uh-huh.
That's very cool.
It's a weird thing, and it's one of those kind of botanical... literalness things that people sometimes really hate.
Yeah.
Like, just call it a berry.
Of course.
Know?
Yeah, you gotta.
Yeah, so botanically speaking, that's what separates it from, you know, anything else.
Sure.
But that's what you'll look for anything in the Moraceae, the mulberry family.
Oh. So
that they have that same thing.
We forgot completely, or maybe you said it earlier, this thing's called the Morris alba.
Oh, gosh, I don't think I did. Yeah, we just jumped straight to it because we're so excited.
Yeah.
Wow, look at us.
The Latin scientific name for the white mulberry, Morris alba.
Morris alba, and the family is named after it, the Moraceae.
Settle a score, Casey.
All right.
Any relation to Jessica?
Ooh, I don't think so. I looked into this. I didn't see anything on the internet. So
right.
I think it's one of those stage names where she was just like, man, this is such a beautiful tree. I'm going to name myself after it.
Good for her.
Probably.
Thanks for playing along. Hey, Casey.
Yeah.
It's time for some homegrown trivia.
Oh my God.
Let's do some fast, fun facts about the white mulberry
here. Let's get there. Let's see what we got.
Let's talk wood, Case. The wood of the white mulberry. Here's something interesting. Not harvested a lot for wood.
Yeah,
because
really
they're
isn't.
So small.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is what I've read.
Yeah, they only get maybe about 40 or 50 feet tall. Generally, they're also very short-lived, so you don't get like the time for them to get really gigantic.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's obviously expensive because there aren't a lot that are used for wood.
That's true. Yeah, there's not a lot, but there are a lot of them, Alex.
Little teaser there.
Little teaser.
The wood's flexible. It's very durable.
Mm-hmm.
This makes it great for sports equipment.
Yep.
We're talking tennis rackets. Because you want that flexibility.
Yeah, and without it breaking. If it's too rigid, you're just going to bash straight and it's going to smash or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. That high-velocity tennis mm-hmm. ball coming at you.
Yeah, right.
Same with hockey sticks. A lot of hockey sticks are made with mulberry wood.
Yeah, see, I just had no idea about that until we started doing this, and I just love that. Yeah. I wonder if there are any people who still use wooden hockey sticks, at the pro level, or do they usually, are they carbon fiber or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, probably, because they're lighter.
Yeah. I fiberglass?
I bet you field hockey uses wooden sticks.
Yeah, that's probably true. A little more cool.
Casey, let's talk medicine.
Ooh, so, Alex, what have you learned about this?
So, I've learned a few things.
Okay, give me one.
The white mulberry. I can't keep it up, Casey. If I have to remind myself every time, it's obviously not something I want to do naturally.
No, we already stuck to it, so yeah.
I'll do my best.
Can't go back now, Alex.
In traditional Chinese medicine, the white mulberry is used for something I thought was very specific and cool, and that's for management of type 2 diabetes.
Yes, which is so curious. I have thoughts about this.
Okay, so as far as I know, and we talked about this right before we recorded and sort of collaborating on our research.
Yeah.
The leaves are mm-hmm. used for a tea, and that is that is the main sort of way to ingest this medicine.
That's my understanding. I believe in Korea it's quite popular.
Yes, yes. What that chemical in the leaf does is it slows down sugar breakdown in your gut, so the sugars are absorbed at a more stable, consistent rate mm-hmm. and manages your blood sugar level.
Yeah, so a lot of times I believe that has to do with just the fiber in the plant. I'm not sure if it's 100% across the grain or across the board.
Wow.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
Calling Dr. Freud.
Don't answer.
Guy's a creep.
This is actually a big thing with eating whole foods, Alex, where a lot of people would say, well, a strawberry or this other thing, an orange, it's just filled with sugar anyway, so you shouldn't eat that because it's filled with all these sugars. And if you're trying to get sugars out of your diet, don't do that.
Well,
then everyone who has been researching this or has read Michael Pollan's book, I guess, would say, actually, when you eat an orange slice,
mm-hmm.
you're also ingesting all the fiber and all the non-digestible stuff that comes with that orange slice.
Yeah.
So then at the end of it, because your body is constantly breaking other stuff down, it just keeps your digestive system working so it doesn't just go whoosh, everything's absorbed immediately because they have to work to get it away from all the other different compounds, then absorb it.
It makes sense. So way nature intended to eat these things.
Exactly. I think that the way Michael Pollan put it in one of his books was that for whatever reason, the sum is greater than the parts when you are eating food. So if you just broke it all down and gave you each one individually, you would be way more unhealthy than if you just gave it to you all in one prepackaged berry-like aggregate fruit.
You know, nature is the greatest grocer.
Yeah. Well said, Alex.
Casey, my favorite discovery from the white mulberry homegrown trivia.
Uh-huh.
A group of researchers in 2006 published a paper called Sexual Plant Reproduction.
Oh.
There is a section of this paper called High-Speed Pollen Release in the White Mulberry Tree, Morris alba. They used high-speed cameras to capture the pollen release of a male white mulberry flower?
Yeah, it's the flower, yeah.
Casey, should we read this chunk of text here?
Yeah, you should, because it's worth it.
Okay. And then we'll probably need you to do a quick translation after we read it.
Ooh, we're going to see if I can.
This is from the paper. We investigated floral anthesis in a male mulberry tree with high-speed video and a force probe. The stamen was inflexed within the floral bud. Hubba hubba. Exposure to dry air initially resulted in a gradual movement of the stamen. This caused fine threads to tear at the stomium, ensuring dehiscence of the anther, and subsequently enabled the anther to slip off a restraining pistol load. The sudden release of stored elastic energy in the spring-like filament drove the stamen to straighten in less than 25... What is this unit of measurement?
That's a microsecond.
25 microseconds. And reflex the pedals to velocities in excess of half the speed of sound.
That is ridiculous.
This is the fastest motion yet observed in biology and approaches the theoretical physical limits for movements in plants.
Isn't that crazy?
Just bonkers.
I had no idea. And like, you know, the mantis shrimp is like famous for moving its claws so fast that there's like a tiny little fission that happens and like boils water and
then
like stuns plants.
I did not know this.
Yeah, that's another one of these kinds of things, like just random plants or animals that do some weird thing.
Yeah.
Then move at such an amazing speed.
It's kind of like a superpower.
Yeah, it is. But I wonder, like, if you put your hand over this, like, would the pollen hit so much you'd be like, oh, ow. And you feel like the plant like kind of like zapped you a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder.
But this
little micro abrasion on your skin.
It shoots it out that fast.
Yeah.
But I wonder why. Like,
yeah.
There's not a whole lot of other plants that like take this method. They're like, most are like, meh, here you go, and just like dust on the wind and then it goes.
Right.
The mulberry tree's like, no, I'm going to use my flexibility of wood to bat this thing out as far as I can. Like,
God.
Do you think that the mulberry like had that intention? Like, I don't know. This hear me out.
I will.
Do you think that in the world of plants and animals, that if we can give them a little agency, do you think like the plants and animals be like, you know what? I'm just gonna work on this and that's it forever.
Sure.
And I'm gonna do this so that when all the other animals and plants are just like, yeah, I'm just kind of, you know, middle of the road, this one plant has been like, nah, I'm above it. I can do this faster than anybody.
It's a bit of a flex.
Yeah, I think it might be. That's the term. Yeah.
Yeah. Casey, of course, the most common use, the most famous use for the mulberry is not its wood.
Nope.
It's not its hyper speed ejaculation.
Yep.
It's not... It's diabetes medication.
Yeah.
It is.
It is, in fact, Alex, the relationship that the mulberry has fostered, I'll say, over millions of years with a very specific species of moth.
Mm.
And that relationship has catapulted the mulberry tree, specifically the white mulberry tree, but also another one, just for a moment, into the stratosphere of popularity across the entire world, but in a way that's kind of like when you look at the biggest companies in the world, they're like completely unknown and you've never seen it, but they produce like the most needed thing in the world. And you're like, wow, I never even knew that was a company, but they're huge.
Yeah.
That's kind of like this. No one really knows or thinks about the white mulberry as much as they should based on the fact that this relationship has made it almost a ubiquitous tree in the entire world.
Fascinating case.
Going to be interesting.
Let's find out more after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Casey.
Hi, Alex.
You know something about me?
I do.
And you do know this, that I love to be cozy.
Yes, that is very true. Unfortunately, I have to get you out of your bed to do work. You know, because our studio here is small.
Yeah, Casey physically drags me out of bed every morning. And you know what?
Slap a pair of headphones on.
And you know what I'm sleeping on, Casey?
What are you sleeping on today, Alex?
My brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
Oh, Alex, I heard about this.
And you know what I'm sleeping in?
What?
My brand new Cozy Earth jogger set.
Ooh, hold on. Let me get a feel of that. Not your sheet. I'm getting my own sheet.
That's right.
Ooh, this is smooth.
Casey is wrapped in his new Cozy Earth bedding. Now, Casey just returned from Italy.
Just got back.
Land of soft fabrics.
Exactly.
And he has waiting for him products from our brand new sponsor, Cozy Earth. Casey, what do you think?
This is incredible. I don't think I've ever felt something so soft and so, like, I don't know. It feels silky and smooth and it looks beautiful.
It's true, Casey. And you know what? I have been sleeping in my Cozy Earth clothing.
Well, Alex, have you noticed anything about your sleep?
I have been sleeping so well And here are some things I love about sleeping in my Cozy Earth bedding and my Cozy Earth clothes.
Yeah.
This is no longer officially an ad. This is just me talking.
Hey, let everyone just come on in. Just come on in here.
Casey, it is temperature regulating, so I no longer have any problems with getting too warm, getting too cool, having to get up and shut the window, having to get up and open the window, turn the heat on, turn the heat off. I sleep through the night. Soon I'll be eating solid foods. And I have such a good time doing it. Casey, I know you've been traveling, you've been flying, you've been not sleeping in your own bed. I cannot tell you how excited I am for you to try this brand new Cozy Earth bedding.
I cannot tell you how much I agree. Just feeling it, I'm essentially swaddled in a sheet right now, Alex.
That's right,
and
you are.
I cannot tell you how excited. I'm going to wash this. I'm going to throw it on my bed today.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to be as cozy as Alex and I, then go to CozyEarth.com and after you purchase, enter the promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, to get 35% off. That's huge.
And Casey, how about this? All of Cozy Earth's products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. I don't have that kind of warranty on my tires.
I don't have that kind of warranty on anything.
So go to CozyEarth.com and use promo code TREES for 35% off. Now go and get cozy.
Yeah, you go get cozy now.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-blooming. Those people are a-walking around. That sun is a-shining. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates. Sit on a patio and drink a coffee. Ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted. Even though I love those people and enjoy being around them, but therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the white mulberry. Casey.
Alex.
I hear tell that you have a bit of a yarn to spin for us. Or should I say, a bit of a silk.
A silken thread.
Yes.
Alex, have you ever seen the television program, the BBC extraordinaire, by the BBC extraordinaire, of course, David Attenborough. Sir David Attenborough.
What is the question?
Let me rephrase. Have you seen the show by Sir David Attenborough on the BBC called Life in the Undergrowth?
Oh, no, I haven't.
Well, I'm not surprised. I don't think you'd really be into it. It's a lot. No offense to you. You're not necessarily one who wants to watch, you know, insects and arthropods and things like that.
This is true.
Super high def, like we're inside of their hovels.
Yeah, I'm not interested. Although I will say very quickly,
yes,
I recently found a Flickr account that has like really good macro photography of biological things.
Wow.
Including some bugs.
Yeah.
And I started looking, insects. And I started looking at some close-ups of like this particular type of fly, and it's like eyeball.
Okay, yeah.
And it was like the most fascinating. I just looked at it for like an hour. It was so fascinating.
They're insane. The compound eyes of insects are beyond understanding.
Yeah, really, really wild. It looks like a it looks like a textured rubber almost.
Yeah. Okay, that's such a good. That's I believe I've seen these kinds of photographs, and they're stunningly mind blowing.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Well,
please
this,
continue.
This show doesn't get quite that intense.
Okay, good.
But it's a 5-part series. We'll have a link to it, and specifically the one that is called the silk spinners. Did you know, Alex, that arthropods are the only thing that make silk?
Please define arthropod.
An arthropod is a species of plant in a very large family. In fact, I think it is just one big order of animals.
Mm-hmm.
And they have segmented bodies. That's
okay.
The big thing. So lobsters and crabs, all insects, spiders,
all insects.
Mites. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They're all under this arthropod.
Okay.
And what they do is they have segmented bodies, and they have legs that are attached to some of those segments, and many of them fly.
Okay.
Many of them within this same realm make silk. And silk is this really weird thing that most people always think about in relation to spiders.
Yes.
Where, you know, spiders make silk. That's like the thing, right? Well, it turns out there are some crickets that make silk. There's some fleas that make silk. There's a whole plant or a whole group of insects. I think they're insects called silk spinners or web spinners.
I'm assuming it's a gradient, and there are insects that do it way better than others.
Oh yeah, some
higher volume.
Well, they do it in different ways, really.
Okay.
So the lacewing, for instance. Will lay an egg and then pull out a little tiny bit of silk and then lay the egg at the top of this like silk thing where it looks like a hair popping up.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of goes, broop, lay, like touches down, gets a little silk on the stem of this plant, lifts its abdomen up and then releases the egg at the top, holds it for just a half a second and then lets it go. And in that time, the silk hardens and keeps the egg up essentially on a big tall shaft of silk.
Wow.
And it does this down the whole thing. If you look closely in the springtime, you can find this like on any given plant where this insect has been.
Okay.
And they will leave it there, and then that it protects it from ants or some other predator that's walking by looking for eggs. It would be like, well, there's no eggs here, and it just walk right by, and the eggs are just suspended above their head.
Ooh, spooky.
So there's that application. There's applications of spiders using it, and what they would do, of course, is make a web.
Sure.
That then it has sticky glue put on it, so then they would make their home and their catch and release program.
Yes.
Facilitation.
Heavy on the catch, light on the release.
So there is one other group of insects that makes silk in a way that is kind of different than all the rest of these.
Okay.
And these are the Lepidoptera, otherwise known...
Silkworm!
Yes. God, that was... Good job. You circumvented me really well there.
Well, you did point at me.
I did.
I thought you were asking me say it.
Oh, I was, specifically.
Okay.
But the silkworm was not the correct answer, but is also the correct answer.
Is leading to a correct answer?
No, yeah. You just... You short-circuited it.
I jumped the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Which is very well done. That was a good, tricky answer.
What was the name of the group you said?
Lepidoptera.
Lepidoptera.
Yes, that is an order of insects.
Okay.
Otherwise, commonly known as moths and butterflies.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the silkworm that you are, like, this is why I said you're right, because that's just the larval stage of the silk moth.
Okay. This is news to me.
There you go. So this is the big thing with silk. This is the evolutionary agreement that the white mulberry made with an insect many, many years ago. Are you familiar with how these how a larval moth creates silk?
No.
Would you like to watch a video?
Sure. Wow.
Alex, did you know that that's how it happens?
No. You know what it reminded me of?
What?
Like a good old-fashioned Amish barn raising.
But with just one Amish farmer?
Yeah. He did the whole thing himself, God yeah, bless him.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, that's incredible. So what we saw, and we'll post this on the Instagram so you can see it too, is a silk caterpillar.
Ah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Spinning a sort of cocoon web of silk, but also kind of using this leaf. Is it a mulberry leaf?
Yeah, that's a mulberry leaf.
Okay. Using this leaf as like, I guess it's eating the leaf as it goes.
It looked like it took some bites, but yeah.
But it also, it's using it as sort of like a, it almost looks like it put up a big like windshield on the side of its cocoon.
Honestly, I don't think that had a whole lot to do with it. I think it just was laying there.
Okay.
And it was using the hard side walls.
Uh-huh.
But what they do is they make one, they would like take their silk and they make it out of a gland in their mouth and they attach it to one point, then they pull it over and they attach it somewhere else. And they go back over, but then they go over that 100 times. Then they go over to another spot and they do it again, but in the perpendicular direction.
Yeah.
And then they keep pulling it tighter and tighter and tighter. And they do this on all these kind of seemingly random planes. So you get this random covering that is pulling in all these different directions. So I think the leaf just started lifting up because there was tension being pulled in
sure.
other places.
Okay.
But most of the time, there's another video. You can find a lot of these. In another one, they just did it on the side of this like rectangular cage. They just kind of went up to the corners and just went and just completely encased themselves. So silk. If you have ever had any silk garment of any kind, that is the cocoon casing of a silkworm that is, in fact, the caterpillar of the silk moth, which is Bombyx mori. And that is what that caterpillar would normally be using to protect itself while it goes through complete metamorphosis, which is in and of itself a topic that's the most fascinating, ridiculous thing in the history of evolution.
Which we will not be talking about today.
We will not be talking about that today. Insects and other related topics.
Yeah, so a piece of silk is made of, not saliva, but this sticky gland substance.
Yes.
A sort of mucus, if you will.
Yeah.
Of this caterpillar.
Exactly.
All right, well... Yeah, my mouth is salivating. You know when you have like hot mouth?
I'm like, oh my God, there's silk coming from your mouth.
Oh my God, don't. It's like the fly, Casey.
Alex, this is disgusting.
Talk about a metamorphosis.
It's something that like you kind of take for granted, you know? And here's a thing to consider. That a silk moth will make, or one silk caterpillar will make upwards of a mile or just below a mile of silk.
That's incredible.
In that entire little process, which takes them, you know, maybe a day or two to just keep building this thing.
That's wild.
Then they, inside, I think there's many times they have a mineralization that goes on the top of it so that the silk kind of becomes this waterproof tight ball. And then they'll sit there for a couple of weeks and then they will not chew their way out, but a little enzyme comes out and it dissolves one of the ends of these little cocoons, and then the fully grown moth, which is metamorphosed, into a full grown adult winged moth.
That's incredible.
And this is the funny thing. They have, these adults, zero mouth parts and zero digestive systems. They are sex machines.
They don't eat?
They don't eat. They don't sleep. They have sex and they die.
Oh.
That is their adult stage.
Oh my God.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Those maniacs.
Yeah, it takes about 2,000 to 3,000 cocoons to make 1 pound of silk.
Oh my God.
How many pounds of pure silk are made worldwide every year?
Do
you have any guess?
Tons and tons and tons.
70 million pounds.
So I was right.
That equates to about 10 billion cocoons.
What the hell?
All the things, everything that you've ever seen, silk sheets, silk blouses, ooh, silk ties, silk everything.
What about a robe?
No, not silk robes.
Well, shit.
I'm just kidding. Silk robes, Alex.
That's, yeah, 10 billion?
They're all made with the excretion from a small caterpillar who's going to turn into a small sex craving moth.
See, now, Casey, this actually, I feel a little bit better about this situation.
Oh, why? Okay.
Because I hear that, you know, we get this thing from animals. I immediately think, oh, they're killed. They're harvested and you know, killed for this stuff.
Yep.
But we are merely, what, taking the silk after they leave? Is it that altruistic?
No.
Of course it isn't.
You know how they dissolve that hole in it?
Yeah.
So normally, each strand of silk, it's one long strand. So they can make it into this big, huge thing.
Oh.
They boil it in water that loosens the silk, and then you can essentially unravel it and then straighten it out, and you get one big, 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 long strand.
But they can't do that if the moth has escaped through their little escape tunnel.
Because it cuts a hole in it, so you no longer have a really long thing. So they can still do it, but it's of lesser quality, and it's not quite as nice because you have to weave a bunch more little bits and fragments together.
Sure.
So most of the time, all of the caterpillars are, well, they're killed. They're boiled to death.
Oh, alive?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, sorry. In the middle of their metamorphosis.
10 billion a year.
Yeah.
Cut down in their prime.
Uh-huh. Yep, there it is.
That's so sad.
Well, let's move on to a happier story then.
Okay.
Or a happier part of our story.
All right.
So when we first brought this up, essentially what I was trying to argue is that this tree has become ubiquitous around the world.
Yeah.
Many thousands of years ago in China, they initially found and started the process of collecting silk and turning it into these fabulous, you know, gowns and things for whoever was the top of the totem pole in terms of hierarchy in the class system of China. And so they started doing this, and like legend has it, like it was this princess, and then she all of a sudden found out this and invented the loom. It's definitely not like that. Who knows what it was? My question is, who was sitting there, found this like tufty, you know, ball of something hanging off of this tree,
yeah,
and just started like plucking it or pulling it around? Like, I don't know.
This would make a nice shirt.
Yeah, we could probably turn this into a fabric.
Wow.
The amount that they'd have to do to make even one strand, much less enough to make a full shirt, is off the charts. Like, I don't even know how they even started this process.
It's got to be one of those things that's like, you know, the first person, like, you think about cheese.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, I see.
Like, okay. Who was the first person to like boil milk with other stuff and be like, this chunky shit that we got out of this process.
Yeah. Left, you know, to ferment for a couple months.
Yeah. So it's probably, but the reality is that there were probably, several hundred steps in between milking a cow. Mm. And eventually I can walk across the street and get some Parmesan cheese.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
I'm sure the same is true for silk production.
And if you have, 10,000 years to do it, because I think they found like remnants of silk, like in 8,000 year old things.
Wow.
So it's a long time. So that's, I guess, incredible. That's your point is well taken.
Thank you.
Given enough time, even that one little thing can be amped up to this level.
Yes.
Well, with the help of a mulberry tree, apparently we can do anything.
Say more.
Turns out.
I mean, tell me more.
That as this happened, the folks in China were like, this is some high class stuff only for royalty. Then all of a sudden, you get a little extra. So the royalty says, I'm going to give this to you as a gift. I'm going to give it to you over here. You can buy it because you're the world's richest, merchant or something like
that. Yeah.
So then they kind of kept it as this super intense secret. And then they started like trading it around. Well, before the Romans, they were trading it, with different people. And it became such a like desirable thing for all the rich people in, say, the West, like the Romans and things like this, where everyone's like, we really want to get our hands on however they make this silk stuff. This is really nice. So thousands of years go by as they are holding this essential monopoly. And then as legend has it, which I believe is more fact than legend, these two Nestorian monks went to China. They hid some eggs of the silk moth in their little staffs and some seeds for their mulberry tree.
Uh-huh.
They took it all the way back across what was then known as the Silk Road, because that's where they transferred and did all their trading for silk, brought it over to Justinian in Constantinople. So, which is now Istanbul. You know Istanbul is now Constantinople.
I'm familiar.
Okay, just want to make sure.
Which concept.
It's an idea here. So then in there in the Byzantine Empire, they all of a sudden realized, boom, we can plant these trees here. Now we have learned the magic of silk, and then,
wow.
Monopoly ruined for the Chinese.
It is also, I will note that it's the importance and regality of silk uh-huh. is reflected in the fact that this trade route was called the Silk Road.
Oh yeah, it's like whatever the biggest, highest quality thing was, right? Yeah. That's it. You're totally right. So that is like how this kind of initial trade started happening. Now keep in mind that we're talking about silk, and by then extension, we're talking about these funny little moths, which, by the way, are domesticated. They can't live or have any amount of sex, which is, again, the only thing they ever crave, without human help. They've
wow.
also they've been bred to make very specific, like high quality thread or silk specifically before it becomes thread. They have turned 100% white. Their ancestors, which is the wild one, is called Bombyx mandrina, and it's like really beautifully colored. Like it has like mottled colors on it, so it can be camouflaged. And so you know how like domesticated turkeys are all white?
Yeah.
Same exact kind of thing. Like they bred for certain qualities, and because they did that, all pigmentation was lost. They're very docile creatures. They don't try and run. Like they're not afraid of humans. It's a wild amount of like taking an insect and domesticating it. This is the first time I think I've ever actually like thought about that.
It's like they're in the Matrix.
Oh yeah. Oh,
are the aliens. the alien uprising.
Yeah.
It's machines.
They're machines. Yeah, the Matrix. Yeah. You're exactly right.
It's the Mothrix,
it's
Casey.
The Mothrix, Alex. That's what's happening right now.
Wow.
It's the Bombyx Mothrix.
And it's truly tragic. I don't know why I'm feeling like I don't really care about insects.
Ah, but you're
say that here
this.
First.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Hold on. That's a hot take, everyone.
Still, 10 billion little lives. Mm-hmm, like it's just so weird
every
and
year.
Sad.
Well, and so here's what makes me think about it with the tree is that we're feeling weird and sad because there's this moth species that gets cut short in its metamorphosis and its case is used up. Meanwhile, we're growing these trees all over the world. This same tree, because this is the tree that they like the most. There was one other tree that they that was like for a second became really popular.
Yeah.
In the United States specifically. They're like, oh, this tree, they actually called it a boom. It was actually really kind of funny. It's Morus multicaulis, and they call it a craze, the same as like the tulip craze in Holland.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, where people were buying like single trees that normally would be up to $5 per 100 trees.
Uh-huh.
They were buying one tree for $100.
Whoa.
It was crazy. And then all of a sudden, you know, the same kind of crash happened where people like were making millions off their beanie babies, and then all of a sudden everyone's like, no one cares about your beanie babies. It's the same thing.
So how did they figure out that the the caterpillars liked the white mulberry best?
My assumption is that they just found it, like that's where they found them growing.
Interesting.
Yeah, so they were just whoever that first person was who just like said, oh, well, what's this funny little fuzzy thing on this
leaf?
They just said, yeah, cool, they're growing on this tree. Whenever you want to find these little fuzzy things, go to these trees.
I see. Okay.
So then they started planting these trees and coppicing them. We've talked about coppicing before.
Yeah. May I?
Yes, please.
You chop off the top of a limb and the tree panics and sends out a bunch of shoots.
That's it.
And you chop those off and use them for various things.
Exactly. So they would give it to animals because just like being good for humans, it's really good animal fodder. But they would also get heaps and heaps of these leaves, and now on an industrial level, we are growing mulberry trees across the world to feed these hordes and hordes of little teeny tiny caterpillars that then feed our insatiable desire for gorgeous, beautiful silk.
Isn't it fascinating, Casey, the lengths humans go to for commodity?
Oh my God, yeah.
It's just a piece of fabric.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it's amazing. And everyone like will bring up like all these other things about the trees where they're like, oh, but the berries. But you know what? Half the berries are not even tasty. Like people just don't think they're good.
Yeah.
They're sweet but bland is what I'm told.
Right.
So this poor tree is like being, in my opinion, ripped apart and just trodden all over the entire world, only because it's like the food that this other thing eats.
Yeah.
Good for the tree, bad for the tree. We don't really know. However, the tree is invasive in the eastern United States. Like people don't like it.
Really?
It's all over the place. I think it's also invasive in Brazil.
Okay.
So people are like, eh, this tree, you know, maybe not that good. Don't really like this tree very much.
Wow.
And so I'm so torn on this because like you said earlier, there is this symbiosis, right? But it's only one-sided. The tree is just being used for this other thing. We can't really eat it. It's not really something good for humans otherwise. It's kind of invasive. I don't know where I stand on it right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't. The whole thing makes me feel very... You ever just feel like third person looking at humans and you're like, what the fuck are we doing?
What? Yeah, it seems like a little bit of a crazy thing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I do that with gold often, where I think of like, why do we give so much like credence to it? It's
right.
It's a rock. It is just a rock. It's a shiny rock.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, entire economies are based off of it.
Yeah.
Which is stunning to me.
It's very strange.
Is that still the case? I don't think we're on the gold standard anymore.
No, but you can, I mean, for long enough we were.
I mean, you can still buy and sell it for something. I mean, it's just a rock.
Yeah.
It's just a rock, and this is just a silky secretion from, I can't say that one fast.
I was going to ask for more alliteration.
a silky secretion from a sanguine species
of
Lepidoptera. Damn it.
So close.
I was trying to think of the best thing for an S. Couldn't get it.
I can't either.
Anyway, so this tree, I think, which is kind of a nice thing to like wrap it up, to give us some ideas on either side.
Okay. Right?
So this is before we go to our review, which as you all know is coming certainly. You have a tree that is more or less just fodder. It's just food.
Yeah.
No one plants this tree because they say, you know what would be nice here? A nice mulberry tree.
Right. Mm.
No one does that. Everyone is planting it because it's just a useful tree to be eaten by a bunch of caterpillars to make silk. It doesn't taste very good. However, from the tree's perspective, somehow it made the right like deal with the right species that then got in the right hands, which are human hands, to be spread across the entire world. So if you are a white mulberry, Alex Croson, would you be stoked or would you be pissed?
I think I'd be pissed, Casey.
You'd be pissed.
You know why?
Even though your population has like exploded.
Yeah.
You've been brought everywhere.
I don't think it would matter.
Oh.
This is the thing.
Okay.
It's like a monkey's paw situation. Right. The tree, the white mulberry says to the genie, I want to be, I want there to be whole fields full of just me.
Yeah.
I want to be useful. I want to be loved and useful.
Okay.
And the genie rubs his hands together. Okay. And then snaps his fingers, and suddenly there are whole factories of these, I say factories, of these mulberries being chopped down for worm food. And the white mulberry goes, no, not like this.
I see, yes. It's a little bit, what you call that, a monkey paw?
Monkey's paw,
Monkey's paw. Is that like a term for like almost a backhanded good thing or something?
Yes, like a classic, like I wish for this thing, and then the monkey's paw goes like this, and then it's like you didn't clarify, so it's like a curse in disguise.
Yes, I see exactly what you're saying. Yeah, I think it is, and that's why this like the story of silk, which is so fascinating, like we barely touched the surface of the history of this because we were like, no, we're not going to talk about the Silk Road forever.
Yeah, there's a lot to say.
There's a lot to say, and it's just such an interesting part of like a cultural exchange that happened over so long, all based around the secrecy and then the movement thereafter the secret was up.
Right.
Of this one tree and this then like essentially obligatory species of moth that then grows off of it, which I also recommend everyone look up a picture of the silk moth, silkworm moth, which I also, you know what? Another problem, Alex.
Okay.
silkworm moth.
Yeah.
It's the moth of the silkworm. I feel a little bit bad about it. It's like essentially saying you are the silk boy man. Like the adult name is named after its child form.
Like it should be called the silk moth worm or the silk moth larva.
Yes,
not the silk moth worm.
Caterpillar.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Anyway, that's
it's because it's more we humans named it, and to us it's more important in its larval stage.
Yeah, that's you're exactly right. Anyway, sorry. Back to it.
No, it's good.
The tree has been then like just drug across the world for better or worse.
Yeah.
In order to produce this other thing for better or worse, and you know, I think it's an enigma of a plant because no one ever like very few people know about it. It's out there. There's, like you're not gonna have a hard time figuring this out, but it's that one link in this chain that for whatever reason is kind of like whatever.
It was all silk. New to me.
Yeah. Silk is important. Silk moths are important. The mulberry tree, also important, but it's a troubled tree, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's troubled.
Casey, with that,
mm-hmm.
Let's get into our review of the white mulberry. I haven't said these words in like 2.5 months. Here's how it works. We'll give some final thoughts on this tree, then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Casey, as our resident expert, we'll begin with you. I say this with a somber note.
I know. I was going to make a comment that I'm not sure where you stand. You seem sad.
The energy is down.
Yeah, and I'm really sorry about that. I actually have an interesting opinion of the white mulberry tree.
Let's hear it.
So initially when I learned the difference between the white mulberry and the red mulberry, I was like, sweet, there's two different trees, whatever. I then learned over time that the white mulberry tree tended to be more invasive, red mulberry tree being the native one to North America.
Okay.
There then I decided I dislike this tree. White mulberry trees should go away. They are for no good. We already have our species here. We must keep that as it is. The native versus non-native in this case, because the non-native is invasive.
Right.
So I was like, meh, don't really like it that much. As a tree that grows, they kind of get a weird growth form. You know how some trees we've covered, everyone is objective in saying its growth habit is beautiful. Like,
yeah,
it grows up, its branch form, its architecture is just always stunning and perfect. Mulberries, not so. They just don't grow like that. They have a lot of weird twisty branches. They can kind of get a weird like twist in their upper stems, and then things go off in weird directions. They don't get big and tall and massive. They don't have a really nice uniform canopy all the time.
Sounds almost Hawthorne-esque.
Yeah, it is. That's a perfect description. So that like it takes it down a notch for me. But then on the other hand, in a cultural way, these trees are extremely important.
Yeah.
People who do know about them in the Overstory, for example, one of the characters' fathers plants a mulberry tree so that he can start growing these things because it reminds of home, right? So that's really nice. This is all really good stuff. The other thing about it is that it is just a part of the matrix. Like it's this uncared about, forgotten thing. It's there strictly to do a job.
The Mothrix.
So I think for the mulberry tree, I'm gonna give it a 5.4.
Okay.
Because honestly, I get it. You're underappreciated for your response. Mulberry trees go away. Silk prices shoot up.
Sure.
Yeah. But
what would you and I do then?
I don't know. Our outfits will be torn off of us to be sold to millionaires.
Yeah. Casey and I are currently wearing silk tuxedos. Yes. We always record in our silk tuxedos.
I thought everyone knew that, Alex. Yeah. I didn't even know that it had to be said.
Peek behind the silk curtain, if you will.
Yeah. Thank you. So, yeah, it gets a low score, though, because, you know, as a tree planted everywhere else,
sure.
Go home.
Yeah.
Go,
as go as home. A tree. In a world of trees,
yes.
On this tree podcast,
yeah.
Not great.
It's okay. Not a great tree. I think if you're going to plant it, you should. And if it is, like here in Oregon, not invasive and extremely rare, you're not going to hear this a lot. Even though I gave it a bad rating because I'm trying to take a holistic view of it.
Sure.
Definitely plant it more.
Wow. Yeah. Underplanted.
Yeah. There's a lot of different contradictorinesses here, which makes our job very hard, I think.
This episode is full of them. I think this is a very complicated tale. Not everything is black and white.
Exactly. Now, as the professional on the other side here, what do you think?
Well, thank you. The white mulberry. I would like to recite from an old folk song, if I could, Casey.
Yes, please.
Here we go round the mulberry bush. The mulberry bush. The mulberry bush. Here we go round the mulberry bush. Early in the morning.
Wow.
This perfectly encapsulates what I think of the white mulberry.
I think it does. Honestly, I'm crying over here. That was so beautiful.
I don't know. God, what a tricky one, huh? I'm in the 5 range.
Okay.
I have to say, I don't love the way silk is produced.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm no vegan, but even I can look at that and say, what the hell?
Yeah, there's a lot of PETA folks would say, please do not buy or support silk.
Yeah. It's not something I honestly thought that natural silk production maybe was like a thing of the past. It feels very archaic to me.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe, we would have synthetic silks, because I'm sure we also have synthetic silks.
Yes, but I think we would just call them synthetics. Like, right. It would be like nylon kind of thing.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, yeah. I don't know. I'm not in love with this tree. I feel bad for the moths. That's my kind of stance here.
Yeah.
And for the tree, I don't know. It's not complicit, but it is certainly a part of this whole game.
Yeah, the complicitness is kind of a weird one. It's almost forced complicity.
Yeah. It's not especially attractive.
Uh-huh.
I like what it does in medicine. That's cool.
Yep. I like its leaves.
It's a couple points. Yeah. I'll land about a 6.
Okay. All right. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not crazy about it.
That's fair. Now, in your professional opinion, should we plant more or fewer of them?
I think we should plant more of them where they aren't invasive. Mm. I've gotten in trouble for this before.
Ah, yeah.
We aren't supposed to plant invasive things where they are invasive.
I feel like you have the appearance right now of someone who just got a ticket. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm not even going to tell you to do that, okay? You always put your seatbelt on.
Take it from me. Don't repeat my mistakes.
Yeah.
Well, with that,
yeah,
that was our review of the white mulberry.
A somber note, Alex.
A somber note. We had a tragic tale last week as well.
Mm-hmm.
What was it?
That was the colonial destruction of...
yes, the Southern Live Oak.
The Southern Live Oak, yeah.
Not great. 2 weeks in a row. This is just reflecting... This is a reflection of the times, Casey.
I got great news, Alex.
Mm.
The next tree we're going to do is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, that sounds great, Casey. Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A this week. Our question is from Preston Helms.
All right, Preston, what do we got?
Preston writes, hey, Casey and Alex. Hello, Preston. My name's Preston, and I just finished the episode on the American Elm. I'm currently working my way up to date with the rest of the podcast.
Nice.
While listening to the new outcoming episodes.
It's double duty.
Hey, here's a fun fact about Preston.
Mm-hmm.
His last name is Helms. Preston says, something I thought you'd find awesome is that my last name literally means dweller at the elm trees.
Whoa.
Particularly the European elm.
There you go.
How about that?
I didn't know that.
I'm not sure if you've already covered this, but I was hoping to ask if you could explain the reason for many upper canopy trees defining an airspace margin called crown shyness.
Ah, yes.
Casey.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about crown shyness on your legendary appearance.
Get out of here.
On the podcast Ologies with Allie Ward.
Wonderful, wonderful podcast. Highly recommend it.
Yes, it's a great one. Especially the Dendrology episodes. Those are fan favorites.
Yeah, honestly, I've listened to them hundreds of times. I think they're so good.
If you spend any appreciable amount of time on Facebook, you will see even this picture of the crown shyness with the caption, even trees love their personal space, you know. So there are memes about crown shyness. What it essentially looks like is sort of the upper limbs and branches of a tree,
mm-hmm,
that have kind of cut out a little canal between one another, and they're not touching.
Yes, but like from specific trees, like this tree won't be touching those trees. Those trees aren't touching those trees.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Casey, let's pull back the silk curtain one last time.
We're going to need to do it.
What is, quote, crown shyness?
This is a lovely phenomenon. So it really is hard to see. Like, you have to find the perfect example of it.
Mm.
I know this exact picture that you're talking about.
Yes.
Essentially, what crown shyness is it's the term for this phenomenon where the trees don't touch each other. So everyone's like, well, why aren't these trees doing it? And the theory that, you know, a lot of people have come up with is that the trees don't want to compete with each other, so they stop right up next to each other, and they don't go any further.
Which doesn't make sense, because don't trees very explicitly want to compete with each other?
They do, yeah. Like, competition and cooperation, all in kind of the same realm,
is on a
population level, is cooperation. On an individual versus individual level, a lot of times that becomes competition.
Yeah.
Especially for resources, where sometimes it's competition for underground resources, but other times it's for that big one that comes from the sky, the sunlight.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, it's a very common thing that a lot of people don't even really know about, but it's there.
If you look at my skin, you might not know that I have familiarity with sunlight.
No one knows that. So as it happens, crown shyness is this, like, the name for this phenomenon.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people think that it's altruism from the trees. It is not.
Wrong.
It is actually the exact opposite. Most of the time, it's nothing more exciting or grandiose than the trees bashing into each other in the wind. And then even if it's like a couple leaves or some sticks and some twigs, they will break off the little smallest bits when they smash into each other. And then when they come back after the wind has stopped, there's a little gap in between them because one thing that used to be there is now broken off.
You have it.
Yeah. Most of the time, the trees will compete. They want to, like, grow over the top of the other. So they will actually be one on top of the other. And then you can't really see there's a crown shyness because there's really not. It's just like it grows up and they're overlapping. So your perspective doesn't really show it very well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think also some of those crown shyness photos are like photoshopped.
Oh, yeah. I bet you you're right.
I think they probably start looking like that. But the whoever wants to share it is like, it's not quite clear enough, so they make it like,
this doesn't fit my metaphor quite as nicely as I wanted to, so let me change it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's usually it. I will say there is a few cases, like in the tropics, where certain insects will actually eat the plants and, like, kill plants around there's like specified tree.
Their plant? Wow.
Yeah. And so that will create, it could create the same kind of idea. It is literally, well, it's more arbor wars more than anything. But yeah, it's a specific kind of thing, but that is, like, not what everyone's talking about.
Right.
But I'm sure there's always going to be someone who's like, well, but there is this one example. There very well may be, but it's probably not the trees themselves. There's some other organism in there doing that dirty deed.
How about that? Thank you so much, Preston, for your question. That was extremely hard to say. Thank you so much, Preston, for your question. If you have a question about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com. That's arbitrarypod@gmail.com. If you'd like to support this podcast, join our Patreon, Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Won't you? Patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can join the $5 Arboretum and get 2 bonus episodes a month, or the $10 Cone of the Month Club, and get a unique die-cut cone sticker sent to you every month in the mail. It's illustrated by an independent artist. It's printed at a cool small business in Portland. You're supporting, like, 4 different independent artists when you join the Cone of the Month Club.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool thing.
Well, Alex, I think I know just by the other day where I believe a red mulberry is planted. I just saw it 2 days ago.
Where is this son of a bitch?
It's a, hey. It's a red one. I'm pretty sure, not a white.
It could be masquerading.
It could be. The leaves had not quite come out, so I couldn't really test it. But I'm telling you this because I want to pick the berries. I'll bring them to you, and we will eat them.
Okay.
I just wanted to share that. This might be something to redeem the mulberry a little bit.
Sure.
If we can get their good-tasting, delicious fruit.
You never have to talk me into eating food, Casey.
Okay, all right. I just don't want this episode to end so sad. I feel sad right now. I want to make sure that we're having a good time.
No, yes, you and I are having a good time.
Something to look forward to.
It's a bit of a sad tale, but you know what? These tales need to be told.
Sometimes they do.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Goodbye!
Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.